Good morning to all. So glad y'all are here today. So glad to see y'all. And this is a good time to remind you of something that's coming up. National Back to Church Sunday, which is a real thing. I tell y'all every year, it is a real thing. You can go to the website and look it up. You can see our church there on the map as one of the few that are going to be participating in this coming year. It's 6 weeks from today. 6 weeks from today. So you have less than 6 weeks now to find out who you're going to invite, and track them down, and compel them to come. And that's biblical, by the way. Compel them to come with you. I hope you will. Be thinking about that 6 weeks from today. Okay, well, we've been slowly rolling through our theme for the year, which is back to basics. You guys remember that, I'm sure. We're looking at some of the fundamentals, some of the foundational aspects of our lives as disciples of Jesus. And as we get ready to discuss another one of those basics this day, maybe it's a good time to remind everybody that we got a theme song this year to go along with our themes. Anyone remember? Does anyone remember? Hit it twice? Okay, let's start again. One, two. There's a problem with me, I'm sure. I'm sure it's me.
Maybe it's time we got back to the basics of love.
All that for this. Okay. Y'all remembered that, though, don't you? And I know you recognize the wonderful voice of the late, great Waylon Jennings there. But did you know that there's actually some possible evidence out there that Waylon Jennings had some connections with the Churches of Christ in his day? And that wouldn't be hard to imagine in Nashville, right, where there's a Church of Christ on every corner, which is weird, but anyway. But Waylon actually has some more to say in this song that might actually help us focus on another aspect of the basics. Now, what do I do to make... Hit it twice? Let's listen. Let's try to listen. To what's going on here.
Let's go to Lutheran, Texas, Waylon and Willie and the boys. This successful life we're living got us feuding like the Hatfields and McCoys. Between Hank Williams' pain songs and Blueberry's train songs and Blue Eyes crying in the rain. Out in Lukenbach, Texas, ain't nobody feeling no pain. So baby, let's sell your diamond ring and buy some boots and faded jeans and go away. This coat and tie is choking me, and in your high society you cry all day. We've been so busy keeping up with the Joneses, four-car garage, and we're still building on. Maybe it's time we got back to the basics of love.
Okay. Anyone remember that song? I could hear some people singing, so I know you did. I know you did. And if we look here, somebody is taking him seriously. And if you look very closely, you can see David is there too. He's taking the picture there in the window there. In Luckenbach, and basically, that's the town. That's it. That's about all there is to it right there. So it's like you've been to Luckenbach this morning. So, by the way, while it's possible that Waylon Jennings had some history with the Churches of Christ, can you guess who in this song actually does have history with the Churches of Christ? What? His wife? Maybe? Willie Nelson? The Hatfields and the McCoys. The Hatfields and the McCoys. They were both families, members of the same Church of Christ in West Virginia. They would leave their rifles outside when they came inside. We actually had somebody come and visit here at this church several years ago who verified, yeah, I'm related to them, and yeah, they were all part of the Churches of Christ. So we've got that going for us, which is nice. Anyway, what seems to be the big problem that Waylon and Willie and the boys are singing about here? What seems to be the big problem in their life that makes them want to go back to the basics in Luckenbach? What? They're fighting with one another. What? What? Too much good. They had too much success. They had too much money. Success and fame and everything that goes with it. You know, the desire to keep up with the Joneses was part of the problem. The four-car garage, still building on. Wearing a coat and tie, which is a symbol of success, apparently. Although in the country and western field, I wonder about that. But at any rate, the high society life that had the wife crying all day. All of those things, ironically, are the very things that come with what they've been working so hard to obtain. All those years, they finally have hit it big and success, and it's a problem for them. I guess you can avoid those kind of problems by avoiding success, right? By failure. Then you don't have to worry about that. But that doesn't seem like something we ought to be doing intentionally, trying to fail, right? There's got to be another answer. There's got to be a better way. Because all of us successful people can't just head off for Luckenbach, Becky. That would ruin the place. So we can't do that. Oops. So what does any of this have to do with getting back to the basics? Waylon and Willie and the boys are having trouble with money, and not because of a lack of money, which is what we generally automatically think is the money problem that everybody has. We don't have enough money. They had too much money, and that sounds like a problem that some of y'all would like to have, right? Let's see how we could deal with having lots of money. Well, let's see. Did I skip something here? I think I did. Yeah, I'm sorry. They were so successful that they didn't even have any old clothes to wear when they got back to Luckenbach. They had to go and buy some faded jeans. Had to go and buy them. Spend money to buy faded, old-looking jeans so they would look poor. When did that get to be a thing? This song came out in 1977, so I guess it was a thing then. And it's only gotten worse since then. Let me present for your perusal this. Are you reading this? When you and your friends survive a bear attack and celebrate with ice cream. Do you know how much money they spent for those jeans? It's unbelievable. So, That's where we are these days. Anyway. But you know who didn't have a problem with money? Jesus. Always the right answer in church. Jesus. Well, almost always the right answer to the preacher's question. And certainly Jesus had none of the problems that Waylon is singing about. In fact, it doesn't seem like Jesus even carried a wallet with him. If he ever needed cash, he just sent Peter down to the lake to catch a fish and get some money out of the fish's mouth. Y'all remember that story? Of course, some might say that Jesus had no real world understanding of money and how it should be valued. I mean, there was a time when somebody came and gave him an expensive, extravagant gift. They poured the expensive perfume all over his head. Now, remember that happened? Then the disciples were trying to explain to that lady and to Jesus how wasteful and how foolish it was. What did Jesus say? "Leave her alone," said Jesus. "Why are you bothering her? She has done a beautiful thing to me." Jesus had no problem accepting extravagant gifts. No problem at all when they were given from love. Another time, he actually thought and told his disciples, can you believe it, that this lady who put 2 cents into the collection plate at church had given more than all the guys who were throwing in wads of cash big enough to choke a horse. Can you believe it? Another time, he really got crazy. There was this rich guy that came up to him, and he was ready to join. This rich guy was ready to join. And man, he would have supported us in the ministry. Can you imagine the big old stretched out chariot we could have? That big old house on the lake we could have? No more rubbing shoulders with the riffraff anymore. But you know what Jesus did? He ran him off. He just ran him off. He told that guy, "What you need to do is sell all your stuff and give it away to the poor and then come and join. Then come. When you're poor, then you can come and join me." Of course, you didn't do it. When he walked away, what did Jesus say? He said, "It's easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than for a rich person to enter the kingdom of God." And the disciples were astounded. "Who in the world can be saved?" they asked. Jesus and money. All of those events look so strange to our modern eyes. All those events sound so strange to our modern ears. Eyes and ears that have been trained since early childhood to strive, to do whatever it takes to succeed financially. And if it makes you feud with people, makes you stay so busy keeping up with the Joneses, well, that's okay. That's okay. Go for it. We're not so different from those disciples, are we? They couldn't believe what Jesus said about rich people not making it into heaven. I mean, rich folks, they're the ones that God likes, right? They're the ones that God likes. Oh, wait. Wait a minute. We don't think that way anymore. We don't think that way. We're modern people. We're enlightened when it comes to getting into heaven, right? We're saved by grace. Jesus is Lord. It's got nothing to do with money. Right? Well, it sure did for this guy. Didn't it? I know. We're all quick to point out that this guy was the only one in all the Bible that Jesus said, "Sell it all." So I guess that means it's not a requirement for everybody. Certainly not for me. Right? Right? Maybe. Here's Jesus' requirements, if you will, for you and for me. Jesus said to all of them, if people want to follow me, they must give up the things they want. They must be willing to give up their lives daily to follow me. I went with the New Century Version here because, frankly, some of the other versions were almost too hard to hear. They say stuff like, taking up your cross daily. And that's just kind of, for us modern people, right? But wait a minute, Ambrose, that does not say anything about money, technically. Man, you guys are starting to sound like a bunch of lawyers up in here. Let's go about this in a different way. Because quite frankly, none of this that I've been talking about is where I was intending to go. Because you remember the actual question was, do you know who didn't have a problem with money? And somebody said Jesus, which often is the right answer. But that's not the answer I was looking for here. What I was looking for was the people who didn't have a problem with money was the Jerusalem Church of Christ. You know, that first church, the one that was started on the day of Pentecost. Y'all remember that church? The church that was devoted to the apostles' teachings and to the koinonia, the fellowship. Remember that? To the breaking of bread, to the communion. To prayer. Y'all remember talking about all that? That's the church. That church, that ecclesia, that sacred called out assembly of people, they didn't have a problem with money. How do you know that, Ambrose? Are you just making that up? No. Let's read about it. All the believers talking about that church were together and shared everything. They would sell their land and the things they owned and then divide the money and give it to anyone who needed it. And in that verse where it says give to anyone who needed it, it's not just talking about the 3,000 people in them who were in that church. They're talking about anyone. And then a couple of chapters later, a little bit later on in the history of this church, not much, but a little bit later, all the believers were united in heart and mind, and they felt that what they owned was not their own. So they shared everything they had. There were no needy people among them, because those who owned land or houses would sell them and bring the money to the apostles to give it to those in need. That's the Jerusalem Church of Christ. A couple of things. You may have heard it said, I have, but you may have heard it said that these verses we just read prove that that church was an expression of communism. Some of y'all have heard people say that. Let me give you a quick civics lesson. This is for free, okay? Civics lesson for the day. That's not right. That is not right. There's at least one gigantic difference separating that early church from communism. And that gigantic difference is set forth right here. All the believers were united in heart and mind, and they felt that what they owned was not their own. They felt it. It was something that was happening from the inside of each of these people who wanted to get involved in this. That's not the way communism works. In communism, someone with a gun comes up to you and says, don't you want to give this to me for the good of the people? You're coerced. You're forced to turn over your possessions. We all see that difference now. Y'all see that difference? Okay. So they took the money and laid it at the apostles' feet, it says in some versions. He gave it to the apostles to give to the others, to give to people who are in need. Which apostle do you think they gave it to? Which apostle do you think was in charge of all this? Matthew, the OCD tax collector from The Chosen. And thank you, David, for showing that clip from The Chosen earlier. That was Matthew taking dictation from Jesus on the Sermon on the Mount. So it was maybe Matthew. It was probably Matthew. But you know what I think? You don't have to believe this if you don't want to, but this is what I think. I think Matthew, by that time, realized that being the church benevolence committee was not what Jesus had called him to be. That's not what Jesus meant for him when he said, come. And he closed down his tax collector station and just joined him. He's got a different calling now. And so, I think, it's just me, I think that Matthew found someone there in that church, one of the members of that church, to handle this distribution. Someone with experience, not just in handling money, but more importantly, in not being controlled by money, not being ruled by money, not anymore. Not after this man had encountered Jesus. Any guesses who this might be? It doesn't say. This is just my opinion. Any guesses who it might be? Come on. What? No. I think it was Zacchaeus. Who's another former tax collector. But when Zacchaeus met Jesus, he was changed. Meeting Jesus changed Zacchaeus. Look what he said. Zacchaeus stood up. He said, look, Lord, here and now I give half of what I own to those who are poor. Half. And if I've cheated anybody out of anything, I'm going to pay it back, and I will pay it back four times the amount I took. Meeting Jesus. There's something about meeting Jesus. There's something about encountering Jesus that changes people on a deep, deep level, on a heart level. Let's think about this a little bit more. This gigantic mega church, which is now more than 5,000 people by this time, consisted of people who, for the most part, very few of them knew each other before they joined the church. Very few of them would have known each other. Remember, most of the 3,000 on the first day came from different places altogether, different countries. They were coming from different countries. So they wouldn't have known each other very much before becoming a part of the church. And yet, somehow, and against the natural impulse that most people have to want to hold on to what they own, these people very quickly became amazing givers, didn't they? Amazing givers. They became people of tender hearts and open hands. They became people of great generosity. How did this happen? What could explain it? Here's what I think. All these brand new baby believers, baby Christians, they're listening to the apostles. And I think they're listening to many others, like Zacchaeus and others, who had been with Jesus, who had encountered Jesus. And they're listening to them talk about Jesus. And they're hearing all those crazy stories about Jesus and money that we talked about earlier and some others. It's becoming obvious to them, to these new Christians, that Jesus wanted his people to hold very loosely to their things, to their stuff, to their money. In fact, they're learning that these possessions that they used to consider as theirs, as wealth that they themselves had earned by their own power and their own work and their own skill, was all actually a gift from God, a gift, a blessing bestowed upon them by the grace of God, and a gift that came with the responsibility of being used to help their neighbors. And then they learned that their neighbors weren't just the people next door, didn't they? Their neighbors were everybody. All they needed to know about their money, their stuff, and what it was for, they learned by learning about Jesus. And they saw it modeled for them in the lives of their fellow church members, like Zacchaeus, and like the lady who poured the expensive perfume over Jesus' head. Like the apostles themselves, who, you remember this? Peter said to Jesus, "Look, we have left everything and followed you." Everything. And so these people of the Jerusalem Church of Christ, they didn't need a 10-sermon series on giving, on tithing. They didn't need that. They didn't need anyone standing up and begging them to give. They didn't need a visit from the ghost of Jacob Marley telling them, "Business," cried the ghost, wringing its hands again, "mankind was my business. The common welfare was my business. Charity, mercy, forbearance, and benevolence were all my business. The dealings of my trade were but a drop of water in the comprehensive ocean of my business." Y'all remember that? By the way, it's 139 days until Christmas. You're welcome. So maybe we can kind of sum it all up like this. When the anxiety and the issues of your successful life have got you feeling like feuding with people, or just feeling like giving it up and moving to Luckenbach, it's time to re-examine your life. It's time to ask yourself, do I really know Jesus as much as I say I know Jesus? Because, like those Christians in that first church, if you know Jesus, if you really, deeply know Jesus, well, then you know the secret to living a life of peace. It comes from trusting in God's grace and in His love and in His care and in His provision. Trust. And with that, and through the power of the Holy Spirit, that then gives you the ability to live generously, to live with hands that are open. Open to receiving God's gifts and open to giving. And so the basic question, I guess, is, do you want to know Jesus that way? Aren't you ready to know Jesus that way? We can help you. If we can pray for you, let us know while we stand and sing.